From the gateway to the west, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, for some time now, we have been following the very strange stories of crop formations around this planet. There are a lot of top-notch investigators, Ed and Chris Sherwood, Colin Andrews, our own Linda Moulton Howe, and tonight, another one, Freddie Silva, who has sent us some incredible pictures posted up there on the coasttocoastam.com website. Freddie's going to take us into a new area tonight as well. We'll be back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Freddie Silva first began researching crop circles in 1990. Freddie is one of the world's foremost experts on crop circles, sacred space, and consciousness, and he is the best-selling author of Secrets in the Fields, The Science and the Mysticism of Crop Circles. He has also just released the DVD documentary Stairway to Heaven, The Practical Magic of Sacred Space, written and produced by him. Freddie is also a lifelong student of earth mystery, sacred space, and ancient systems of knowledge. He is an internationally known lecturer and has appeared on the History Channel and Discovery Channel, as well as numerous video documentaries, and now our guest on Coast to Coast AM. Freddie, welcome to the program. How are you?
Good morning, George. Not too bad, considering we're having a nor'easter up in New England.
Oh, are they really already, huh? Hey, how did you get interested in investigating crop circles? Because you've always been interested in earth mysteries. Did you just tie that in with that?
Would you believe that I sort of got interested while I was actually ironing a shirt and minding my own business when I was living in Chicago. I was watching television one day and, like I said, just doing my manly chores of ironing a shirt. And I saw this thing on television. It was this this image. And it just seemed to mesmerize me. It seemed to just unlock this subconscious memory. That's the best way I can describe it. And I remember my then wife sitting there and saying to me, well, what do you think it is? And I said, I don't know. And she says to me, well, you just said you knew it. No, I did, but I don't know how to explain it. I remember this symbol, and it seems so familiar. And the sound was turned off. It must have been some kind of a news program or something. And this is one of the first major pictograms of the time, the huge 600-foot pictogram in Alton Barnes.
Yes.
And it just seemed to awaken something inside, and it just led to this incredible journey of rediscovery, of reconnecting dots which I'd sort of known about all my life, but I'd never really sort of paid much attention to. I mean, when I was a young child of about three, I was drawing pyramids all over books and things, and I never even knew how to spell the word pyramid, lest know what it was for. So I guess it's been a sort of a genetic thing. I've known about these things for a long, long time, and the more people that I've come into contact with over the years who've studied this phenomenon, they too have come up with the same story, that it seems to be part of their genetic memory. These things are waking up something in them that they seem to have come here to try and work out.
And you know, Freddie, even if 99 out of 100 of them were made by man, there's that one that's unexplainable. And that's all you really need in this kind of investigation, isn't it?
Absolutely. Because once you have something that you cannot rationally explain, or indeed cannot be totally explained by current scientific thought, then you have the basis of a phenomenon.
Is it correct to say that the crop formation phenomenon is a relatively new situation, or has this been going on since the beginning of time here?
It actually appears to have been going on far longer than we've been aware of, because as we know, The crop circles really came to the fore in the early 1980s through the media in England. But the more we talk to people, the more researchers ask around, talk to farmers, talk to their predecessors, and even go back through family history, the more it's becoming obvious that the phenomenon has been going on for far longer than we've been aware. And to date, I think over 200 cases have been catalogued, all the way into 1615. So it does go back quite a bit. I mean, for example, I was aware of several cases back in the 1930s when the farmers used to be out mowing the fields, harvesting the fields. And they talk about witnessing what they called the devil's twists, as they called them in those days, tiny little vortices of wind that suddenly propelled parts of the field to just flatten themselves in these circular shapes. And in a very mysterious way, too, because when they tried to spring the plants back up again, they just snapped back down as if they'd sort of been made molten at the base and re-hardened in a new horizontal position. Some of these reports were actually filed with the police, and there are mentionings of balls of light, tubes of light, all kinds of bizarre incidences. And even in 1678, we have a mention in England in but by no less than the director of the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford, who wrote in the History of Staffordshire, which is a county in England, who wrote about these circular impressions in tall grass and in pasture, some of which were shapes which are hexagons within circles, squares within circles, and it doesn't sound like it's your typical sort of fungus that's sort of affecting the crops. I mean, these things had geometric shapes. And even in the 16th century, there's a chronicler who worked for Henry VIII who went around England noticing things about local folklore which ought to be written down for posterity. And one of the peculiar things that he wrote about was the origin of maypole dancing. And he asked the maypole dancers in England where they got the idea for the geometric shapes that that they took into the dances around these central poles. And what he discovered was that these people said that they would go out in the early morning and copy the geometric shapes that they discovered lying in the tall grasses. Quite amazing. I mean, I don't know if that's a crop circle, but certainly it does sound quite interesting that they go out in the first thing in the morning, find these geometric shapes in tall grasses. It does make you wonder. So it certainly is a very old phenomenon. It keeps coming up sporadically in history. But it's only in the modern era that when people really started taking attention to it, in other words, that the devil will stop being blamed, that suddenly it seemed to react, and it suddenly sprung to life and quadrupled and multiplied in great, great shapes as into the phenomenon that we know today.
And they seem to be getting more sophisticated. The geometric patterns seem to be very, very elaborate than they were just a few years ago. Is that the case?
It certainly is. I mean, there are still simple circles going around the world, in fact, in 29 countries so far, that have actually reported 29. These happenings. They seem to be, it's almost as if from the mid-80s, the more attention they received, the more they began to multiply in their complexity. And by the time you get to 1990, they took a quantum leap when they suddenly developed into pictograms. In other words, circles with straight avenues connecting other circles. And by the time you get to 1991, of course, we start getting into the famous Barbary Castle tetrahedron shape, and the Mandelbrot set even popped up as a crop circle. And then they seem to have had a little lapse for a couple of years. In the mid-1990s, they again developed into another quantum leap, and today we're getting fractals of all bizarre shapes and sizes. And they seem to be getting bigger as well. And in the last few years, they're getting fewer and fewer, the genuine ones, in the last few years. But the what they sort of lack in number, they are certainly making up for complexity.
The pictures that you supplied us of the crop formations, Freddie, assuming, let's for one moment, mankind made them, and that may not be the case, and it most likely isn't, but assuming that they did, how long would it take, for example, the crop formation with the circle that's on the coasttocoastam.com website. How long would it take two people to make that sophisticated design? And first of all, we have to assume that they're not seen, that there are no footprints getting into the field, that they have that somehow all covered and taken care of. But if just two people were out there in the field doing that, and that's an immense circle, and the pattern is pretty elaborate, how long would it take them, do you think?
Oh, in complete darkness, hiding from the farmer.
if they get caught,
they're going to be in serious trouble. There are serious laws of prosecution in England for this kind of thing. You have about 4 hours maximum in which to sort of lie low and exploit the natural darkness of the land that time of the year in England. There was one firm that was actually contracted to hypothetically map out that kind of design in a field using 2 to 3 people, and I think they came up with something like 5 to 6 hours just to sort of map it out properly, put stakes in the ground, align certain things, and another couple of hours on top of that just to actually physically flatten properly. And I think that once they were told that the parameter included doing this in the middle of the night without any kind of visible equipment, then I think the actual parameter went over to something like 12 hours.
Oh, my gosh. Even with night vision goggles, I think they'd have trouble, don't you?
Yes, which they actually employ, some of these people, so I've heard, and even little laser lights and things. The story gets more complex now, George, because what we're seeing today in England is that groups of people, up to 12 people, are actually going out, getting permission from the farmer, paying them a little bit of money, because some of these people are not making much money off the land in England. It's a very, very difficult job, farming. And so I don't blame them for taking a little cash in hand, because they get much more than the actual crop is worth. So you're seeing groups of about 12 highly trained people with permission from the farmer, which immediately gives them immunity from prosecution, going out in the middle of the night and executing some rather complex patterns of late. But at the same time, we have to remember and be very aware that what they're making is basically land art, and that's the big difference, because the difference between a man-made design and a genuine crop circle is the fact that in the genuine article, the plants haven't been damaged at all. And if you look at some of the photographs, especially from the early era when few people really took an interest in this, you'd find that in the genuine designs, if the plants are left alone, in a couple of days, they start springing back up towards the sun, which is what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And when you have no, when you incapable of achieving that kind of effect in a material which is very, very supple, then obviously the parameter becomes very impossible to achieve. I don't think I've ever seen, even with all my years in England, any man-made crop circle that even comes close to the genuine article in terms of reproducing the features that we find in the genuine crop circles.
These people who pay farmers so they can go out and do this land art, are they pawning this off as a crop formation, or do they admit to everyone, hey, we made this?
It's almost a bit of a joke, actually, and you have to understand the English mentality to that extent. It's a bit of a game for them. Some of them admit to it. Most of them don't admit to it, because obviously, once they do, they're up for prosecution. Not that the police are really interested over there, because they've got much more important things to do, like catch other criminals. And there's the rub. They do have that sort of edge. But I mean, they don't really own up to it. They kind of hint about it. They make certain subtle claims. And then when they're challenged about it, they kind of retract them. It's a bit of a game. And I think that they like to sort of maintain the innuendo, if you like, because once you put a suggestion in there, the seduction becomes that much more alluring for people. And also, when you put the suggestion that there might be something not quite genuine about what you're seeing on the internet or on television, then you have that doubt that creeps in, and your ability to believe what you're seeing is somehow lessened. And I think that's a big thing that I find difficult. And I support the public in this, that once they have reason to believe, to doubt what they're seeing, then obviously the authenticity and the believability of the phenomenon comes into question. And I think that's what the hoaxes are trying to do. They're trying to stop you from believing just by putting the doubt in there.
29 countries are reporting crop formations. Of those 29, what countries are getting some of the most reports? I would assume England being one of them, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think about 80% of all known crop circles, and we're talking about over 10,000 reports now historically. I'd say confidently, looking at all the databases available, 80% in the south of England.
80% of all of them? 80% in England?
Absolutely.
It's huge.
Yeah, it's quite a large number. But the more you go back in time, the more we start looking at archive material, at local reports, the more we start getting a sense that there's been also a large cluster in the Canadian and American prairie, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Montana, that particular area up there as well. There are certain reasons for that, geological reasons for that. And then they're interspersed in little bits and pieces all around the world. I mean, even South Africa has reported crop circles going back into myth as well. In fact, it's written in local folklore that these circles of the gods have been appearing for many hundreds of years. And whenever they appear, there were times of great celebration. Tribes used to come out and put flowers all the way around these circular depressions. And people would take 3 days out to do feasting and honor what they called the gods. So it certainly does live in the folklore of certain countries around the world, for sure, yes.
80% in England. Why England? Why that country?
I'd like to say it's something to do with the beer.
but I don't think it is.
Or the weather.
yeah.
There's something about the. There's two connections that seem to have come up predominantly in the research. One is the association, the historical association with the sacred spaces that still dot that part of the world. We have one of the largest concentrations of Neolithic sites anywhere in the world. Northern Europe, northern France. Southern England, Wales, that whole area is very, very rich in ancient history. And what some of the early researchers like Delgado and Andrews found out was that the circles seem to be appearing beside, near to, in alignment with sacred spaces. These are places like Stonehenge, Standing Stones, the earthen mounds that we call the tumuli. There was a certain association with that, as if they were trying to remind us of an old ancient spiritual technology that was still in the landscape and was now being utilized by the what I call the circle makers. There's also the idea that there was something about the geology of the land that was very much important to the way that the crop circles appeared, because southern England is very, very unusual in that it lies on top of a great big piece of chalk. It's the world's deepest chalk aquifer. Hmm. And when you start plotting all the known crop circles on a map, it begins to take obvious note that they seem to favor this incredible large piece of chalk. Now, the same can be said of the Canadian prairie, except in the Canadian prairie, we have limestone. And limestone is the chemical twin of chalk. So there seems to be a favoring of this particular aquiferous ground.
Why would that be, Freddie?
It seems that, and I'm not the first person to say this by any means, a number of people have looked at the aquifer connection with the crop circles, and it seems to me that the water is part of the actual manifestation process, because chalk and limestone both are very porous rocks, and again, limestone being the chemical twin of chalk.
Right.
And when you have water, and especially a place where it rains a lot, and underground aquifers, where you have water that comes pouring through a chalk and limestone, you get an effect called absorption. And it means that when the water passes through this alkaline rock, it creates an electrostatic charge, which means that the whole area of southern England, for example, becomes very highly charged in terms of electromagnetic static energy. And I think that's also that is part of the actual formation process, because when farmers have gone into the crop circles, first thing in the morning, one of the first things that they report is that the ground is absolutely bone dry inside the circle and very wet outside. it seems to be part of the process, that the energy involved in making the crop circles is favoring the water, because it certainly is drying it for sure.
Well, that's a good point. With the interaction of people and crop circles, when they go to investigate, do they come up with similarities of all these hundreds? Think about that. We'll be back with you in a moment, Freddie. I want to find out about similarities that are out there. And there's lots more to talk about. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505. Somewhere deep below the earth. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
Well, don't forget, when you subscribe to the After Dark newsletter, you'll also pick up the June UFO special, and that is a home run, especially the story of what could very well be an alien child, a hybrid living in Mexico that some say could be a reptilian. I mean, that is one heck of a story. You can order by calling 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online, coasttocoastto. And then Coast AM, all right? You got to have that all together. CoastToCoastAM.com, and pick up the 14 issues for a price of 12, and it's called After Dark. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our special guest tonight, Freddie Silva. Freddie, similarities of these crop formations all around the planet. Are people reporting similar things when they go in there and check them out?
By and large, yes. The things that keep popping up here and there, I'm talking in very general terms now. Eyewitnesses, for example, they talk about seeing balls of light, balls which are basically translucent yet very vibrant in color, the size of a beach ball, just flying around the area either before or after a crop circle manifests. They talk about beams of light coming out of the sky and hitting the ground, swirling the crop in front of them, retracting back into the clouds, and either a crop circle manifests in front of them, or one pops up about 24 hours later in that same location. They talk about the a trilling sound that they hear, almost like a cicada. And this seems to precede any kind of sighting in terms of eyewitness reports. They also talk about the way in which the plants appear to have been just made molten at the base and sort of flattened in a new horizontal position, but yet with this wonderful springiness to it, as if they're still almost hovering just above the soil, about an inch above the soil. They talk about the dryness of the soil inside the crop circle, and specifically in the Canadian prairie, where a lot of the farmers pay a lot of attention to this phenomenon. And in fact, to this day, they've actually assisted the researchers to an incredible degree of cooperation. These are some of the things that the general observations that people talk about. The spiraling of the crops as well is very important. Even when you have things like straight lines, what amazes me is the little detail to some of these designs, where even straight lines, their origin on the ground appears to be based on a spiraled motion of energy, which eventually branches itself out into this snaking pattern, this waveform, almost resembling a sine wave on an oscilloscope, which eventually gives the impression of looking like a straight line from the air. These are some of the common features that we keep finding across the world. So it seems to be the same sort of technology, if you like, in the greatest sense of the word, that seems to be adopted no matter where you go.
Freddie, I had heard that when people go into these crop circles to investigate them, and some of them bring electronic equipment, that in some cases the equipment goes haywire. Is that true?
Oh yes, it's if you if you enjoy your electric equipment, please leave it at home. It's a very expensive phenomenon. I've seen people take. Let's say, I think one of the most famous cases, which actually I wasn't present, but the person who was there was very trustworthy. There was a busload of about 12 or 13 Japanese tourists, all of whom simultaneously went into the same crop circle, and every one of their equipment, I'm talking about cameras, video equipment, every piece of that equipment failed simultaneously. Whole packs of batteries that should have lasted for 14 hours were drained in a matter of minutes. That is quite an astonishing feat. I've heard that the BBC on several occasions now have taken to interviewing people inside crop circles, and in hindsight they wish they didn't, because as soon as the camera crosses the very perimeter or the edge of the crop circle, a very agonizing array of red warning lights starts appearing on their equipment, and to this day I think they've lost about two or three very, very expensive video cameras, and I'm talking about equipment going into the $20,000-$30,000 bracket. I've been in airplanes in microlights, for example, these incredibly large wings with a little engine strapped to them. Whenever we cross the airspace or the crop circle, funny things start happening to the electrical equipment, and even anybody with cameras flying over the airspace or the crop circles will also find that their equipment will sometimes not work whenever you happen to be in the airspace. I have one very famous case where I was flying into a crop circle from about 500 feet in the air, and I can show you on my negatives exactly every shot on the approach, all the way around, always going around the crop circle, and the nine frames that were shot over the actual airspace are completely dead. There's nothing there. And yet, when the film continues and we're flying out of the airspace, there's a perfectly exposed picture every frame after that. It's as if you're entering a sort of a shielding effect. And I mean, it has a temporary debilitative effect on aircraft equipment, just in case anybody's concerned about this, because there have not been any fatalities involved, luckily. But I do know helicopter pilots in Wiltshire in England who, to this day, refuse to fly over the airspace of a crop circle because they, of all their equipment start going awry, or their compasses don't start pointing north, things like that. So you are basically going into this rarefied space, this magnetized field of energy, which seems to extend quite some way up into the atmosphere.
So here's the question. Is the magnetic field that's in the crop formations, has it been brought there from another source, or is it using this planet's magnetic field?
I suspect that whoever is doing this and whatever is doing this, and I don't for 1 minute suspect that it's local, it has complete understanding and control of natural universal principles. And by this I mean the principles of light or electromagnetism, of sound, of magnetism, and quite possibly even the ability to harness and manipulate the local gravitational field. The magnetic part of it comes from two points. Very early reports, eyewitness accounts of people who used to go into crop circles and found that whatever metallic objects they took inside the crop circle, they found that they had been magnetized. They could stand pocket knives on end in a crop circle. Young kids who take bicycles into them found that the bikes had taken on this magnetic charge. Compasses suddenly became frozen and attracted metal objects to them. Strange things like that. And in the modern era, Colin Andrews, who did some remarkable work in the late 1990s to look into the magnetic effects of the crop circles, discovered that in between 5 and 20% of them, if I'm not mistaken, that the Earth's magnetic field, the local magnetic field in and around the crop circle, appears to have been shifted by exactly 4 degrees. We're not quite sure at the moment why this should be. My hypothesis is that this shift, this local shift, what I'll call a phase shift in the magnetic field, is what is allowing this little cookie-cutter effect, this little window of opportunity for information to come in from another level of reality into our own third-dimensional space-time continuum. It's this little shift which I think is worth really looking at very, very closely. And from what I recall of Colin's research, when they actually did magnetometer surveys of the local area, the actual shape of the very crop circle on the ground appears to have been imprinted in the local magnetic field some way below the ground as well. So it's very much worth looking at. It's very important data, and it is quite surprising to me at the time when he'd mentioned the fact that as a result and the consequence of his research that in 80% of the crop circles that he'd went into during that era that he could not find this and suggested that they perhaps had been man-made, that right. So many people attached the attention to that, and yet we should be looking at the important data that he discovered, because that is very, very important, because if indeed these people, as I call them, because I'm sure they're perfectly physical in their level of reality, as we are in ours, if these people have got complete control of natural principles and they're able to shift the local magnetic field, then obviously there's something there for us to look at, because there could be incredible benefits that come from that. I mean, we know for one thing that our ancestors used to use the very same magnetic principles to align churches, to align ancient sacred sites, because we now know today that the actual diameter and circumference of the crop circles is perfectly delineated by the actual crossing points, the crosshairs of crossing lines of the Earth's magnetic lines of energy, what some people sometimes call ley lines, more accurately called telluric currents, which is quite a mouthful, actually.
So, Freddie, if you were in the middle of a crop formation and you tested it and it did not show any strong magnetic field, unlike, let's say, some others that you might have been in, would you then assume this one was probably man-made?
It would be one of the indicators. There's a huge laundry list of checks that my colleague and I go about doing. It's just one of the very many things that we try to look for. But here's the strange thing. It seems to come and go. There's no rhyme or reason. Sometimes you'll be there and it'll happen. Your compasses will start pointing in the wrong direction, which is very annoying when you try and take measurements. In some cases, the actual compass itself will start spinning around, even though you leave it on the ground and you haven't even tapped it, and you've got no metal objects nearby. I mean, the compass is just going completely around in circles, as if someone fed it LSD or something. It's quite strange, and there's no rhyme or reason as to when it happens. It comes and goes. No one knows why. It's as if it's almost obeying some kind of movement in the Earth's magnetic field shift itself. because we do know that there are certain times during the day when the Earth's magnetic field is at its lowest ebb. For example, the hours between 2 and 4 in the morning, the Earth seems to be going through this sort of sleep mode. In fact, it seems to open up its magnetic field, which allows information sort of to come in and or also to leave. In fact, it is a known fact that between the hours of 2 and 4 in the morning, some 90% of recorded hospital deaths actually occur. It seems to be that there's this window of opportunity when the magnetic field is at its lowest ebb that people's souls are allowed to leave. And by the same token, a window is created that information is allowed to enter. And that's very interesting.
What do you think is the reason why we are getting these formations? What are they sending us?
For this information, I'll go back to the early 1980s. And I quote a lot of information from a very gifted woman in England, a very good friend of mine, actually, named Isabel Kingston, who used to be a banker. And then she had these incredible premonitions and became a psychic. And it was something that she had been born with, but sort of not really pushed to its limit in her early years as a banker. In fact, being a banker and a psychic is quite an extraordinary feat when you consider that it requires the use of both your left brain and your right brain. And I was very privileged to, in my early years of research, to look through her channelings and she had began to vector this information from this group consciousness that began to tell her that in the next few days of Earth time that the world will be seeing impressions in the fields, in the corn, as we call it in England, of circles that will be showing information that will be of help to the human race. And it fascinated me to no end, because 7 days later, they in fact did get the first rash of crop circles in the modern era around the base of Silbury Hill, which is basically Europe's tallest man-made spiral mound, a site which actually dates back to 2600 BC, and it was actually erected under the guidance of the Tall Ones, or the Shining Ones. And in fact, the name Silbury actually means the Hill of the Shining Beings. And I go back to this because when you look at the transcripts, they begin to tell us that these circles and all of these shapes were all meant to carry certain information that was coded inside of them. In other words, encoded geometric information that carried codes that would help wake up humanity to its greater responsibility. And I quote this verbatim, by the way.
Why do it in a code, Freddie? Why not just lay it right out there for us?
Well, this is the big question, isn't it? Let's say you and I were having a nice drive through the field, George, and having a nice quiet banquet, talking to ourselves, listening to some good music on the radio. And if we came across this beautiful golden field, and we saw these enormous letters that said, good morning, Earthlings, we are from Mars, I think we'd be very amused. We'd definitely get out of the car and take a picture and tell everybody back home, this is a bit of a lark. But would we really take the opportunity to get out of the car, walk into the field, and find out how it was made? I mean, would we really sort of go in there and look for geometric theorems? Would we look at the way that the crops had been altered? Would we take the samples back into the laboratory, find out if there were changes to the molecular structure of the crops, to the crystalline structure of the soil, if there were any connections to other forms of ancient language that was encoded into them? We certainly wouldn't, I don't think. And I think that the whole reason for using symbol as a means to attract our attention is because symbol gives an essence of concealment. And I'm not talking about hiding something from you in a naughty or a malevolent way. I'm talking about engaging your curiosity as a human being. What is the symbol saying to me? Why is that symbol almost known to me? Why is it speaking to me? And the reason is because each of these symbols, we now know, when you take them apart and you start looking at the constituent parts, you begin to find that there's a hidden harmonic ratio that's encoded into them. You start looking at the fact that there are hidden geometric shapes encoded in all of the designs. So, for example, you could be looking at a ring and a circle that's outlying, and when you look at the way that they're connected invisibly, you'll find a hidden geometric ratio. And those geometric ratios are fundamental to the way the atoms in our bodies arranged. In other words, they are, the crop circles are almost mirrors of our genetic code and our molecular code. And as such, we start looking in the mirror, and part of our subconscious starts speaking to us of this memory. Something about this symbol is triggering something in my mind, and it's helping me to remember. Which goes back to what I was saying at the beginning, how I and many, many other people who are involved in this research seem to have the same premonition that these things are triggering something in our subconscious that are helping us to remember. And look at us now, 20 years later, in our modern research, all the books that have come out, all the research, all this information that comes out from the crop circles, talking about new mathematical theorems, new elements that to do with sound, new information that talks to us about how the plants have been altered at the crystalline level. Even the soil has been manipulated. Even the water has been coded inside the crop circles. This is new technology, new forms of understanding that the crop circles are giving us. And I think this is why they're using symbol. It's part of the mystery. It helps us delve much, much deeper than we would do if we were just given a very simple answer.
What if they're time travelers, Freddie? What if physical time travel of a human being is not possible in the future, but maybe this is a way they can try to communicate with us? Maybe they're trying to tell us things from the future, and maybe they've somehow invented some device that etches into the land, into the crops. Is that possible?
Theoretically, I think it would be possible, and of course, time is a very mysterious subject in itself, and it's tied to gravity, as we know. My understanding is that their concept of time doesn't really exist. These are beings, as I said, they're perfectly physical in their level of reality. And in some cases, we can't even begin to conceive of their shape because they are so ethereal. And from my understanding of a lot of the channeled material that has come through, is that they actually exist in our time, in their time, and every time. For them, there is no distinction between past, present, or future. And what they're basically saying is that they are part of our own history, then, now, and in the future. And the whole purpose of what they're trying to do is to wake us up to our greater responsibility, because we, as part of this molecular world where nothing really is physical, as science now knows, all that seems physical in the universe is basically a bunch of atoms stuck together, spinning at a frantic speed, giving the impression and the illusion that everything is physical, when in fact it's not. If you take the human body apart, for example, and you condense it down to its component parts, you probably occupy the space the size of a teaspoon. And when you think of the world as being a series of atoms in a series of vibration, every time we have any thoughts or any deeds or any actions on this planet, they have a sympathetic effect somewhere else in the universe.
All right, hold that thought, Freddie. We'll be back with you in just a moment. Hold on. Be right back.
The After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505.
Now I stand here helplessly, yeah, hoping you get into me. I am so into you, I can't get to nothing else. So into you, baby, I can't get to nothing.